from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Last week, Google announced it will ban ads for payday loans. Ads for loans that you need to pay back quickly with very high interest rates, and I mean very high. The payday loan industry is big, online and offline. Lots of Americans take them, and a lot get stuck in debt traps they can't get out of. It's a rough world, but in a world where many Americans say they could not deal with a $400 emergency, people keep coming. This hour On Point, new scrutiny on the payday loan industry. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you taken out a payday loan, a bunch of them? Were you able to pay them back? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Interest rates, what can they be on an annualized basis? 300%? 400%, 500%, 1,000%. Here was President Obama about a year ago talking about payday loans.
Millions of Americans take out these loans every year. In Alabama, where I visited this week, there are four times as many payday lending stores as there are McDonald's. But while payday loans might seem like easy money, folks often end up trapped in a cycle of debt.
More payday lending operations outlets than McDonald's. Comedian John Oliver took on payday loans on HBO's Last Week Tonight. He ran a counter campaign starring comedian Sarah Silverman. Here's Silverman.
Hi, I'm Sarah Silverman. If you're considering taking out a payday loan, I'd like to tell you about a great alternative. It's called anything else. The way it works is instead of taking out a payday loan, you literally do anything else.
There may be new rules, and quite soon the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is expected to announce something before very long at all. But Google has already acted, and it's interesting. With us today, first from Washington, is Aaron Reike, principal at Upturn. It's a consulting firm, works with advocates on technology issues. He was part of a coalition that lobbied Google to ban payday loan ads. Aaron Reike, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
How did you do it? They made money off those ads. They will for a couple more weeks here. I guess it all stops in July. But how did you get to Google and get them to take the ads off?
Well, they did make money off of those ads. And I think part of what was successful here is the fact that we had civil rights groups, consumer advocates, and privacy advocates all speaking with one voice, expressing the various problems with payday loans. You had civil rights groups emphasizing the disproportionate impact that payday lending has on communities of color. You have consumer advocates emphasizing the point of the debt trap that you heard President Obama speaking to a moment ago. And you had privacy advocates saying, look, you know, when people share data with a company, even if it's something as simple as a search query, that shouldn't be used to harm them.
Who advertises on Google? Is it the shop down on the corner where you can go to the counter and get a payday loan, or is it online payday lenders?
So the shop on the corner could certainly choose to advertise on Google. What we found in our research is that the vast majority of the ads that we saw in Google and Bing were actually payday lending marketing companies. So these may not even be lenders themselves, but rather outfits that would ask you to share a bunch of your personal financial information and then very quickly auction your data off to the highest bidder, which could be a really, really bad payday lender.
So you're actually saying that the high interest rates, and they, which can literally be 300%, 400%, 500% plus on an annualized basis. Those are a problem, but this the way they get into people's private data when you apply for this online, also a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, both of those things are a big deal. And part of the problem is if you imagine yourself sharing your data with an online lead generation marketing website, they're going to take that data and they're going to auction it off to the highest bidder, which is very likely a lender that's going to offer you a higher interest rate. I've seen as high as 1,800% APR in our research. So that's problem one. But there's the double whammy of as that applicant's data is sold through the ecosystem, a lot of unscrupulous people can buy it. So you may be stuck with a high-interest loan and then later even get financially defrauded down the road.
Then there's this. Google and other big online players may themselves be interested in doing lending. Is it possible that Google is banning the ads of future competitors to its own business operations?
That's certainly not my impression. The mainstream financial industry has not really been in the payday lending game for a long time now. It's always been kind of a fringe marketplace. And my hope is that the lenders of the future and the lenders that companies like Google or others may want to start up aren't in the business of offering triple-digit APRs.
Aaron Reike with Upturn in Washington, part of the group that lobbied Google to ban payday loan ads. They succeeded. Aaron, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Americans take a lot of these ads. And you can say, all right, it's a lousy business, it's ugly, but people do it because they don't have money. Here's a commercial for Speedy Cash, company offering short-term cash advances, payday loans.
Having a root canal?
Uh-huh.
Bet you could use a payday loan from Speedy Cash for up to $500 cash on the spot.
Yeah. Hey, a dentist.
A dentist, no, but he plays one on TV.
Ooh. Love that Speedy Cash.
Yeah, love it until you have to deal with the interest rate to pay it back. Here's a commercial in Spanish for the payday lender Money Mutual.
Rosy Hernández ayuda a mucha gente, y cuando ella necesitó efectivo rápido, nosotros ayudamos a Rosy.
So your Spanish may be all over this, but just in case it's not, Rosy Hernández works in healthcare, she needs some loan, goes to Money Mutual, and they say, you know, call, and you can get up to $1,000 for tomorrow, and you only have to be 18 years or older, and you only have to have an income of $800 a month. You got Rosy saying, my patients count on me, I count on MoneyMutual.com. Watch out. You can get in a deep hole in a hurry. With us now from Athens, Georgia, is Mirza Baradaran, law professor at University of Georgia, author of How the Other Half Banks, Exclusion, Exploitation, and the Threat to Democracy. Mirza Baradaran, thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Is anything, apart from the Google ban on the ads, are things getting better in the payday loan business for consumers or not?
I don't think that we can say that they're getting better at all. They're not getting worse, certainly. I mean, this payday lending sector is a relatively recent phenomenon, recent as, you know, the 1990s, and it steadily has been growing over the last several decades. And so it is bigger now than it ever has been, but it has not changed significantly based on any sort of regulation or an increased market demand. Although you do see, as people get poorer and have less stores of income, there's going to be a higher demand for these loans. And you have seen that over the last several years since the financial crisis.
I mean, we've always heard about, heard about loan sharks for forever, one way or another. What kicked off a bigger boom in this payday lending in the 1990s?
Yeah, so this is sort of the longer story of bank innovation and change and transformation that I try to explain in the book. I mean, we used to have a banking sector that was focused on community banks that were accessible both to every community and also that offered a diverse array of products, you know, small savings accounts, small loans, and things like that. We had the credit union and the savings and loan that were actually innovations meant to counter loan sharks. These were innovations of you know, the early 1900s where people said, we have these high interest loans, and so we need a safe alternative. And so you have these, you know, mutually owned cooperatives that come in to fill this void. And those over the 70s, 80s, 90s have to merge and leave those low income areas because of a lot of things that are going on in banking, specifically deregulation and a merger wave. And once those banks leave communities, they create a void. And payday lenders and fringe check cashers and all of those other financial alternatives fill in that void. There's just this direct causation as when the banks leave and when these payday lenders come in. So they are actually feeding a market that is there. It's always been there. It's just now that banks aren't, those regulated, publicly supported institutions are no longer serving those markets. And that's why you've seen the steady rise of this industry.
And tons of people use them, need them. This is Chuck Brennan. He's founder and CEO of Dollar Loan Center. It's a short-term lender in California, Nevada, South Dakota, Utah. Talked to the PBS NewsHour in January. Of course, this is his business, but he points out there's high demand for these short-term loans.
We have a huge customer base. In South Dakota, we've had over 40,000 applicants for loans over the years. Over 20% of the state who's over 18 has applied for a loan here, which really shows there's a need for the product out there.
20% of the state over 18 has applied for a loan? Think about that. That's a lot of people needing a payday loan just to keep going. Mirza, stand by. Sabrina's calling from Miami, Florida. Sabrina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yes, my mom's been doing this for a couple years. I'm visiting her on the 15th. She's running over there to pay them $550. I guess she borrows $500, but she has to give $550 back. And then she has to take out the $500 again because she can't afford to be $500 short that month.
So she's in the trap,
she's been
Sabrina.
Doing this. Yeah, she's been doing this for a couple years now.
When you are paying $50 to borrow $500 for 1 month, you're into that very high interest here. Does she know that it's bad? Why does she do it, Sabrina?
Well, she has a warehouse my dad doesn't know about. She has to cover that warehouse, those warehouse fees. But my dad doesn't know anything about it, so she can't say anything to him. But she just, you know, she gives him the $500, and then, she, you know, she's $500 less that month is just too much for her, so she has to loan, you know, take out the loan again for $500 plus the $50.
Yeah. Everybody's got something going on. Sabrina, thanks for calling. I mean, Marissa, remind us, when you're paying $50 on every $500 just for 1 month, what that looks like in terms of annualized interest rate.
Yeah, so what she's talking, what the caller's talking about is the business model of payday lenders is a rollover model. So usually for about 2 week periods, right? So these are from paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
You take out a certain amount of money, let's say the $500, and you pay a flat fee of $50 to take it out for those 2 weeks. But very often people can't, at the end of that 2 week cycle, pay it back. And so you pay another $50 to $75 to $100 to take out that money again. Most loans are rolled over at least 4 or 5 times. 20% of loans are rolled over about 10 times, right? So when you have that cycle that's actually part of the business model, you really start to see these APRs climb up to very, very high digits. But, you know, as you said, as, you know, Sarah Silverman points out in the John Oliver, and as you said, there aren't other alternatives. And so to call these people, you know, this is a stupid loan. Do they know that these are high fees?
Yep.
I think a lot of people understand that these are high fees. It's just that there's nowhere else for them to turn. You know, Sarah Silverman, even in her advice, says go anywhere else. But really, you know, there is no other place.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the payday loan industry. Under fire, Google has kicked their ads off. They say America's poor need us. You can join us this hour. Do you know how America's cash-strapped, America's poor get by? Do you know what they pay for the quickie loan to pay the rent? And has that been you at the payday loan counter paying whatever it takes to get the cash you need? Question is, are we permitting a system that's designed to get people hooked on super high interest debt, or is it too simple to beat up on payday loan shops? Are they charging what the risk demands, what cash-strapped Americans these days need? Is this really okay? Marissa Varadaran joins us from Athens, Georgia, author of How the Other Half Banks. Bethany McLean will be with us in just a minute from Chicago. A call or two first. Here's Joshua in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Josh, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Okay. What's your story?
Back in California, I wound up getting my car impounded and had to take out a couple payday loans to get it out of impound. Well, I was never actually able to get out of that, so I would have to pay the loans back and then immediately retake them out.
And so you were in that debt trap cycle. What kind of interest were you paying? Did you ever calculate it out, annualized?
I do not remember the interest rates, but it was about probably an additional $100, $150 a month that I was paying out compared to what I was borrowing.
Why did you go that route, Josh? Why didn't you, I don't know, no savings, nobody else to tap, you know, Uncle Bo?
Unfortunately, Bob? I had just moved out to California with no friends and no family, and I kind of gotten a bit of a problem. So it just, from there, it just spiraled outwards.
Hard to get out of it. The car, you need the car, so you go to get the money to get the car. And there's the story. I've got, here's another, this is a, thanks for calling, Josh. Here's Ramon Zayas. He got a payday loan from 500 Fast Cash. They charged annual interest rate of 476%. Talking here with CBS News.
I borrowed $250. I thought I would pay $325. I actually paid $700, but it would have been $1,100 had I not gone to the bank and put a stop to this.
The industry says, look, we give people what they need. This is Jamie Fulmer, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs at the lending company Advance America, talking with CNBC about their average customer.
They have an average household income of about $54,000. They all have a job or a steady source of income. About 90% of them have a high school education, and all of them have a bank account. So the customers who use our product are more underbanked than they are unbanked.
Underbanked. That is a big part of the point of Marissa's book, How the Other Half Banks. Marissa, stand by in Athens, Georgia. With us now from Chicago, Bethany McLean, financial journalist who's gone after Enron and big lenders in her books, The Smartest Guys in the Room, All the Devils Are Here, Shaky Ground. Her piece in the May issue of The Atlantic is Payday Lending, Will Anything Better Replace It? You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Bethany McLean, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So, I mean, you make the point that if you take this away, you're going to leave a lot of people really in trouble. Mercer describes that landscape of banking services that have just gone away. Does that mean that this is just the way it is, the way it needs to, has to be, Bethany?
Well, it's a really depressing situation because you look at the exorbitant interest rates that people are paying and you think, well, why doesn't somebody else come in and undercut them and offer a better interest rate and offer consumers a better product?
Yeah.
And isn't that the way competition is supposed to work? Or why doesn't the payday lending industry itself, why doesn't competition lead to lower rates? And the sort of fascinating thing is that it doesn't, in part because default rates are high, but in part because the more competition there is among payday lenders, their overhead rates of their stores are also very high. So they actually need to charge these very high rates in order to make money. So it's a business model that doesn't particularly seem to work for the industry and definitely doesn't work for consumers. There are, I suppose, some glimmers of hope. People have tried in the past to encourage both banks and credit unions to do it for various reasons, including regulatory pressure in the wake of the financial crisis for those institutions not to get involved with people with marred credit. That's been very, very tough, and partly because of the expense of making these loans. There are online lenders that I would say are offering a slightly better product. The interest rates are still exorbitant, but you can prove your credit and earn the right to get a lower interest rate over time. You can improve your credit scores, unlike with traditional payday lenders. So it's I would say a small improvement. It's not where it should be, but it's a small improvement.
Marissa, how does it actually work? They're making these loans. What secures the loans? The main thing, as far as I can see here, is getting hooked into your banking accounts.
That's right. So they're unsecured loans, which is, you know, they're riskier than, say, a mortgage or but you do also have title loans, right? So those are secured loans where you are mortgaging essentially your car. And even those loans, though, have high interest rates. And so it's not as though they're gauging the interest as much. I mean, as Bethany points out in her great article and just now, these lenders tend to migrate up to the highest interest rate allowable by law. There's not evidence that they're competing on price. And so to say, well, yes, of course, low-income borrowers are higher risk, and so they should pay higher interest. But these interests aren't exactly linked with that risk. And one evidence of that is the title loans, right? So you have the security interest of a car, but you're still charging 300%, 2,000%. So they're essentially, a title loan is a payday loan, except you get to lose your car too. So part of this is that there isn't a competition that gives these loans give these payday lenders something to compete against. You know, I think, as Bethany pointed out, the online lenders are an option. I happen to think that there are other larger options that would work. Walmart, for example, I think is a competitor here. Google, I know you asked at the top of the hour whether they're planning on it. Now, they may not be, but I know there's a lot of, you know, quote unquote, fintech, financial technology firms that are trying to get at this market. So it wouldn't be like a payday loan, but it would be small credit, unsecured at a lower interest rate. And then, of course, I advocate for the post office, which I think has the scale and the, you know, breadth of a Walmart model, but could do it also at a lower cost.
We've got a lot of callers who want to go to them, but people are still asking, wait a minute. We've got from Twitter here, Cole says, why not go to a normal bank? Now, you alluded to the reasons, but spell it out, Marissa. Why not?
Banks are not interested. I mean, they're not interested in these loans. I mean, you try going to a bank and saying, I need $500 for the month. They will laugh at you and see you out. They aren't all even interested in your small deposits anymore. They'll take them, but they'll charge you fees, you know, $35 accrued over, you know, several weeks just to, if you go a little bit under the minimum allowed by their account. So banks really, they don't profit from small deposits. They don't profit from small loans. They're interested in other markets, right? Huge syndicated loans with other banks as part of consortiums. That's where the money is in banking. And so they've left this market long ago.
They don't want your business. Angela in Winchester, Massachusetts. Angela, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What have you seen?
Hi, Tom. I am actually a victim of the payday cycle. I was in Mississippi for about 2 years, and I fell into the trap for maybe $100 bill, or $100, you know, water bill, electric bill.
Yep.
And I found myself renewing it every pay period. So I'd take out, you know, $400. It would cost $20 every pay period, but you need that money. So unless you have a financial intervention, which I did from family, you're stuck. And in Mississippi, where it's economically depressed, I told one of my friends, I said, there's more payday facilities out here than there are gas stations, to echo what President Obama has said.
Every which way you turn, there they are, ready to make that loan, and pretty soon, boom, you're stuck in it. We're glad you finally got out. Angela, thanks for calling. One more, Boca Raton, Florida. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. I actually encountered this with my girlfriend when we first started dating. She was under pressure to pay her rent by both her roommates and her parents, and she's rather underemployed. About $200 short, and she was only able to take out the minimum $500 loan in about the 15, 20-page, very small-type document. It showed that they were allowed to raise the rate up to 1,048% annually, and she found herself paying $220 out of her paycheck garnished because she had to provide her routing number and bank account to receive the money every 2 weeks. So she had already paid around $1,200 past the loan when I got her out by just paying the $500 that she initially borrowed.
Wow, that is going to add up fast. 1,048 as a top there. That's a high top indeed. Matthew, let me get one more story. Boca Raton, thank you. Fort Collins, Colorado. Sharon, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling to provide you with a public service announcement.
Okay.
I want to tell your listeners, don't do this. Don't do this. It's so right. Sarah Silverman was just so right. Don't just.
Has it touched you, Sharon? How? What?
I have 7 of them because they are everywhere. I got into financial problems. I've been a single mom all my life, and the hole just got bigger and bigger and bigger. I work. I'm a hard worker. I'm older now, and it's getting hard to keep up, and these loans are absolutely destroying me. So just don't do it, anybody.
Yeah, don't do it. And yet people do it. I mean, Bethany, why? Is it just the plain need? I mean, is this really about payday lending, or is this about Americans who just don't have the resources? We saw that report that came out that said most people couldn't deal with a $400 emergency. Will those come up?
Right. Well, I think it's easy to cast payday lenders as the villain, and they are in many ways a villain. But of course, they're a scapegoat for a deeper problem in some ways, right? And the deeper problem is that people need the money in the first place. And so that's the root problem that we need to address, is people's need for short-term credit and inability to find employment that will cover that. And I don't mean to imply that the payday lending industry is virtuous, but we're looking, in some ways, we're focusing on the wrong problem.
In a few years ago, what was around 2006, as you remind us, Congress passed this law capping loans to members of the military at a 36% annualized rate. Now, that's not low, but that's not 360% or 1,000%. Why not just do that for the whole country? Say, okay, 36%, that's the cap.
Well, part of the problem is the payday lending industry will go out of business at a 36% cap. They say they will go out of business, and that's not just jawboning. They actually do leave states that cap the rates at 36%. So that's akin to saying no payday lending. And then you have to answer that really difficult question. In the absence of other alternatives today, is it better to have the option to take out a payday loan or to have no options at all? And I think that's a tricky issue.
You say post office, maybe, Marisa. What kind of program might they have?
Yeah. So, you know, as you said, and as Bethany alluded to, it's very hard to regulate away these loans. I mean, we've been trying this cat and mouse game every state plays. In my state of Georgia, payday lending is just outlawed, except we have title loans and we've got these internet lenders.
As in
that come
title
in from,
on your car. So there you go.
Title on your car. Exactly. We've got these internet lenders that go, you know, charter on a Native American reservation and then they can lend into the state. So it's been a, you know, whack-a-mole or cat and mouse game of different regulations. And I think, you know, the CFPB does have a federal mandate, so there could be some, you know, improvements there. But if we're thinking about regulating this industry, we have to recognize that there's a market that they're addressing. Right? These are people who need the money, and so I think if we're talking about regulation, we've got to couple it with an alternative. And so here is where I've studied this out in the history and looked at where credit unions and SNLs were really able to tackle a massive problem by providing an alternative. And I think for today's economy, the post office is most suited to do this. And so what it would look like, you know, is you go to the post office, you'd have a small savings account. So that's the other problem, is people don't have a means of saving without worrying about these fees. And so you'd have a small savings account, which hopefully would give you a buffer so you wouldn't need the payday loan in the first place. You would have a place to cash your check. That's the other part of being unbanked, right? The unbanked pay 10% of their income just to use their money. So that's money that they could keep because they would have a checking account. And then the post office could possibly offer an alternative, something below a 36% APR on, you know, some loans of $500 or less. And so this, you know, would provide an alternative that would be healthy. And again, this doesn't deal with the massive inequalities and wages, but it does give people credit in a pinch, right? Your car breaks down, you need that $500. You don't have family. And plus, borrowing from family has other costs, right? There are social and, you know, personal costs that people don't want to deal with rationally, right? So I think I see the post office as really being able to step in and providing a public option in this sphere.
Bethany, what kind of country are we that we don't structure our banking system so that it works for the whole population? I mean, Maris is describing millions of Americans who don't have access to just elementary, simple banking procedures. What kind of structure is that?
That's a wonderful question. I think it's very tricky, and it's a very difficult confluence of factors, particularly in the wake of the financial crisis, where banks blew themselves up on lending to consumers with impaired credit. And now their regulators have said, you're not going near that business again. Not only did it cause you financial losses, it caused you reputational losses. So you have regulatory pressure that's moving in the opposite direction of the consumer advocate pressure. And credit unions have told me they also have some cultural issues, because it is very hard to make money doing this kind of loan, even at a 36% interest rate, not just because of the default rates, but because of the cost of underwriting these loans, determining if the customer can really pay it back. And culturally, for a lot of banks and credit unions, it's very hard to offer a very high interest rate loan. That's not what they want to do. That's not their business. And then there's one last issue, which is consumer choice in all of this. Some percentage of consumers who choose payday loans do it because of the convenience, because they're tired of being rejected by traditional banking institutions. So they go to the payday lender, who's wonderful and courteous and friendly to them, at least it seems like. And so credit unions have also said, look, when we've offered this as a service to our members, we found that there's some who don't want to take it. They prefer the convenience of the payday lending store. They're tired of getting burned by traditional institutions. So it's a very multi-layered, complex issue.
Marissa, I guess with your post office proposal, you're kind of giving up on commercial banking to provide this service.
In a way, yes. But I see it as an alternative sort of national banking model, right? So for the past 200 years, as I explain in the book, we've been very focused on community banking as the answer to poverty. And that model doesn't work in the moment we're in, right? We've got five banks that control 80% of the nation's assets. We are in a national banking sector, right? Alexander Hamilton was right.
Yep.
Thomas Jefferson turned out to be wrong. So we have to understand that there's got to be a national component here. And that, to me, is what the post office does. It's not changing the banking structure. It's just offering an alternative that's national.
You think this could not be you? The Federal Reserve says 47% of Americans say they wouldn't be able to cover an unexpected $400 expense with savings or credit card. That leaves people borrowing, and many going for payday loans with multiple 100% annualized interest rates. Is that you? Is that people around you? And what should we do about it? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the payday loan industry under fire. Bethany McLean is with us. She's got a terrific piece in The Atlantic. Payday lending, will anything better replace it, is the headline. Give you a deep dive right there. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. And Mirza Baradaran is with us from Athens, Georgia. How the Other Half Banks is her book. You can join us as this been you at the payday loan counter, paying whatever it takes to get the cash you need. Do payday loan makers need to be cleaned up or reined in, or do we need to make sure Americans are paid more? I mean, what's the answer here? We'll hear in just a moment from Dennis Shaul. He is with the group that represents payday lenders across this country. Jim in Colorado Springs, Colorado first. Jim, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, my mom and dad are both retired. My mom passed away a couple of years ago, but before that, they needed money for medications that the insurance didn't cover.
Okay.
By the time they were done, they were in a loan cycle, $1,500, paying 333% interest. The town that my parents live in is a retirement community, and they are predatory towards elderly people in that town. You can throw a rock and hit a payday loan. It took me years to help my parents dig out of this hole just because they were trying to live. So you can't tell me that these people are not predatory and take advantage of people in need.
Jim, we hear how bad that was. We hear it right in your voice, and I appreciate your call. Let's go straight to the organization that represents payday lenders. Dennis Shaul joins us, CEO of the Community Financial Services Association of America, represents small dollar, short-term payday advances, joins us from Washington, formerly served as senior advisor to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts and worked on the committee that brought out the Dodd-Frank bill. Dennis Shaul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Speak to our caller from Colorado Springs there. You can hear the emotion in his voice, Dennis. His parents in a retirement community, and it looks to him like, you know, circling buzzards there. And they got a hold of his parents, 300%+ a year interest rate. And you can hear how hard it was for that family to get out of that, to buy medicine, Dennis.
Yes, I get that. And I have a few things to say about that. First of all, I don't represent, and no one does, the entirety of the payday lending industry. I represent a group of payday lenders who have best business practices, are registered in every state that they're in. And we suffer greatly from those payday lenders who have unconscionable practices, and many of them are offshore entities that are unregulated. So it's one of the problems that we face is this is not a monolithic industry. The second point I would make, and I grant you that there are cases, even among our lenders, who I think represent the cream of the crop, where the rate is too excessive and where there is a failure on the operator's part to point out to the borrower that under our rules, our best business practices, a person who cannot pay their loan after two attempts is entitled to go into what's an extended payment plan, meaning that no interest is charged from that point on, and they're given an indefinite period to pay off their principal. Unfortunately, this is a very nuanced and difficult area. I associate myself with some of the remarks that have been made earlier. It is, if I was an activist all my life, and if this were the 1960s, there would be great outrage across the country about the fact that over half of our population cannot put together $400 in an emergency, and we'd be looking for solutions. Solutions cannot be centered totally on payday lending. It represents, at best, a fraction, in answering the need, a fraction of those who have this kind of problem. One of the things I think we're very interested in is trying to develop new models and new forms of lending that are not single pay, for example, and allow people a greater opportunity to pay off a loan over time. But I will say this, that it seems to me that there is a general feeling in the country that is anti-bank, that arises for many reasons, but banks are stuck in a way too. Compliance costs for banks have risen 300% since 9/11.
For payday lenders?
No, I'm just saying for banks, they have gone up 300%.
So what?
The compliance that is a part of know your customer, of tracing out what a person is going to use their money for, of complying with the increased regulations after 9/11 has triple the cost of what we call compliance.
You're saying that's why banks don't serve poorer Americans?
No, I'm not saying that. I think that's one of the reasons. Now that is true, banks look on each customer to determine whether or not they will be or are a profit center. If they are not, there's no interest in serving them. The ABA, American Bankers, recently did a survey of 100 banks. Out of those 100 banks, there were less than 1%, it was only a slight percentage, I think it was 3% of those banks that gave a loan for $500 or less on an unsecured basis. We can't look at for the banking system, unfortunately, to take up this question. So the question.
But you're suggesting that we either have a banking system so vulnerable that we go into a recession, almost a Great Depression, or we don't have services for Americans. That
I'm
just
not
seems
suggesting that at all.
Okay.
I'm suggesting factually that it is the case that banking costs have risen as a result of government regulation. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Anyone can look that up.
Sure.
Given that that is true, and given that banks are a profit-making venture,
yeah,
it's going to be necessary for them to look at the question of who is their customer. They've made a determination that that customer has to be a profit.
Well, that's my point. And if they decide you're not, then you're out, and you're in the street looking at a payday lender. And that's where we are now, right?
That is pretty much correct, but that is the inevitable result of what is going on. If you're not a socialist and you are in favor of the private enterprise system, you're going to have to allow banks to make a profit. We have a crunch between the necessary compliance to make a bank safe and also to alert it to money laundering problems, for example, and the necessity to serve various aspects of the population.
Bethany McLean, jump in here. The CFPB, we talked about earlier, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is expected to come out soon with federal rules for the payday loan industry. What is expected there, Bethany? And is it a regulatory regime that could fix, clean up payday lending? Will it shut down payday lending? What's anticipated?
Well, I don't think it'll be perfect. I don't think it can be perfect. I think what the CFPB is trying to do is strike a balance between protecting people from the worst aspects of payday lending while maintaining access to credit, because they recognize that right now, as Dennis was pointing out, there aren't that many other alternatives. So the fact that they're trying to strike this difficult balance means that people are going to be angry on both sides. I suspect consumer advocates who would like to see payday lending be so tightly regulated that it goes away are going to be angry if the CFPB's rules still allow access to this form of credit.
Mm-hmm.
And the industry is going to be angry if it cuts into their profitability so much that they can't afford to make the loans anymore or wipes out their profitability. So I think the CFPB is trying to walk a very, very difficult line. And it gets to this very underlying thorny question. What is consumer protection? Is consumer protection telling people these loans are bad for you, therefore you can't have them? Or is consumer protection trying to make the best of a very difficult situation and make the loans as safe as possible while not telling people you can't have this product? I think it's a very difficult issue, thorny in my view.
Dennis, I want to hear from you on that. Let me get a call or two first, if I may.
Sure.
Mark in Portland, Maine. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thank you. I wanted to bring up a couple points. One, I've been a financial advisor for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And what I found in my past experience is that it's about choices for people, that they choose to use cell phones and that are very expensive. They buy Starbucks coffee. They go to fast food restaurants. They seem to spend their money in the wrong places, and then all of a sudden they can't make it work. Their budget's out of whack. So I think it's really about choices that people make that need to be more educated than it is about predatory lending. And the other comment that I want to make is about the post office. I mean, if you look at their balance sheet lately, they can barely stay in business. They are constantly looking at ways to run their business. How can they possibly get into lending of all things?
Mark, let us pick them both up. Marissa, first to you. You know, Mark's a financial planner there in Portland, Maine. He's saying, just stay on top of your business, people. If you can't afford the Starbucks, don't have it. The cell phone, don't have it. This is your fault for getting into the situation where you turn to the payday lender. And how on earth did the post office bail them out? They can barely deliver the mail on their, you know, red ink budget.
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect, the idea that people are just making bad choices that end up with them in poverty is, I think, it's insulting to a huge group of the population. I mean, these are people who are systemically poor. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that live in inner city urban areas or the rural South, and they're just making bad decisions generation after generation, and that's why they're poor. I mean, yes, maybe as a financial plenty of people make bad decisions. I make bad decisions all the time with my money, but I've got a huge buffer that allows me to make bad decisions. I don't have money management skills. I just make enough money that it doesn't matter. I actually think the poor have better money management skills than those of us who don't need them as much, because they are skating on very, very thin ice. They're juggling, you know, as I say in my book, you know, we're all juggling financially, but they're juggling with knives, right? One bad move and it's over for them. And yes, the post office is struggling. Part of that is a political problem. In 2006, they were forced to pre-fund their pensions going out indefinitely, you know, and that gave them a $6 billion shortfall immediately. The post office is not a bad institution that needs to go away. I mean, this is the other myth, I think. We've got, this is an institution that developed our democracy, that made a decision very early on, pre-constitution, to serve every community regardless of costs. It's one of the last public institutions that is essentially democratic in its nature.
But where would the money come to make them a banker? Where would it come from?
You know, it's from small savings. They aren't going to be bankers in a large sense of, you know, mortgage banking. These are small services. This is an $89 billion industry of financial services. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't need a subsidy to do this. There's two ways here to reduce the costs of these services. One is scale without any subsidy. One is scale, and the other is better underwriting. So this circles back a little bit to the Google scenario, right? Some of these fintech firms think that they can bring down the cost by better underwriting, using data to determine creditworthiness as opposed to just giving a flat high fee to everyone. The other is scale, and this is the Walmart model, and I think the post office can also tap into. You already have brick and mortar, you don't have that overhead, so you bring it, you add another product to your already existing product, so you have a much lower cost, just, you know, as soon as the customer enters the door. I also want to, I think Dennis is right also that these are not bad guys. This is not, you know, villains versus victims. I resist that.
I don't know about that.
I
mean, some maybe not, but yeah, okay, some. But others, they know exactly where they're putting their stores, and they know exactly what the resources are there, and they know exactly the debt trap that people get into routinely. And that has to be part of the business model.
I don't agree with that at all.
For none?
Absolutely no research that goes to that. There are four Federal Reserve studies. None of them, one within the last 6 months, none of them finds payday lending harmful. It can be harmful to individuals, and there can be problems with it. It is not meant as a solution for people who have month-to-month difficulties. I would point out to you that everyone who takes a payday loan from a storefront does so with already having a bank account, a checking account. We're not even talking about that vast number of people who are totally unbanked, who are a separate class. The problem here is augmented or made possible in the first instance by the fact that there is simply not enough living wage going on in this country at the moment. Now, I don't say, and I want to be very clear about that there are not abuses in this sector. There certainly are. But this is not a sector that makes a great deal of money. We on return on capital is comparable to what you get if you're in the if you're in the store of business.
What portion of people pay these loans back within a month or two, Dennis?
It is a majority. It is a majority of them. And if you doubt that, I can happily send you on the research that's there.
And that leaves some significant number. I mean, we already heard in this hour, Bethany, the number who end up spending, I don't know how many cycles to get back out of this.
I think
the number of people who are in the cycle for multiple over 10 is very slight compared
over
to.
Over 10?
Yes.
But by the time you get to 10, you're paying big.
Yes, but that's a failure of the customer and the operator, because the provision, as I stated earlier, is there for anyone who wants to exercise the option of an extended pay plan.
With the members of your organization, as
that
you point
correct.
Out, many are not. What do you expect from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in terms of regulation, and will it rein this industry in, or will it kill it? What do you see coming, Dennis?
I don't think it's going to kill it. Look, I associate myself with America. This is a very difficult thing to do properly. They have two mandates, essentially, to keep credit available and also to protect consumers. I think they have been diligent in trying to walk that line. I disagree with them on many of the features that they have so far looked at, but I think that the process is still being played out, and we'll see where it lands. But there's no question that they have an obligation to protect consumers against the worst of the cast of payday lenders, and there's also no question that the demand for money in this sector is really great, and we are only a portion of that which could meet that demand. So there has to be action at the state level to improve the range of products that are there for people. Having available a product that is a one-time payment for a short period of time that is designed to meet emergencies, when the emergency has become the inability to make your monthly income match your monthly expenditures, we need more than payday lending to solve this problem.
Bethany, do you see a balance coming here on regulation and services that people need?
I'm not sure. I think it's a very, very, very difficult, but no, very, very difficult balance to find. But on that note, it's really fascinating. There's also a huge regulatory issue in this country because these short-term small-dollar loans are regulated by the state. So one of the issues we've been dancing around is, well, isn't it better to have a small-dollar loan that can be paid back over time? Well, the truth is, a lot of state regulations don't allow that.
That's
so
right.
In California, for instance, you can make a small short-term loan, but it has to be paid back at once. Or you can do a loan over $2,500, I think is the number, and that one can be paid back over time, but the loan has to be over $2,500. So the state regulations are this mess that makes the whole issue much more complicated.
Well, talking about dancing around, I guess you got millions of Americans dancing just on the line of needing these loans, dancing on, yes, maybe some money management, but also the living wage issue right at the heart of this as well, and so many having to tip over into payday loans. Dennis Shaw is CEO of the Community Financial Services Association of America, trade association representing a bunch of them. Dennis, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity.
Bethany McLean, her great piece in The Atlantic is Payday Lending. Will anything better replace it? Bethany, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
And Marissa Baradaran, How the Other Half Banks is the book. Check it out. It's great. Marissa, thanks so much for joining us from Athens, Georgia.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is On Point.